Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's Thursday, the 21st of July, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030. This is Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and we want to say hello to our simulcast partners, our friends in Globe who listen to us on KJAA, and our friends down in Cochise County listening to the Buckmaster Show via KAPR in Douglas. Our show is always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com, along with archiving at least the last 2 weeks of our programs at buckmastershow.com. We are live weekdays, noon to 1 p.m., and we have another outstanding lineup of guests for you today. We're going to talk about those proposed changes in the admissions policy to Pima Community College. With me in studio, PCC Chancellor Dr. Roy Flores. Scott Stewart is also with us, one of the five members of the PCC Governing Board. At the bottom of the hour, Tucson Padres General Manager Mike Fader will be along. We'll be getting an update on the baseball franchise and the long-term outlook for AAA minor league baseball in Tucson. Then we close out the show with Ken Scoville. Ken is the Buckmaster Show historian. We're going to talk about what it was like living in Tucson during the monsoon before we had air conditioning. That is quite a sobering thought. The Buckmaster Show is interview-driven, but we encourage you to join in if you have a comment or question. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040. Toll free, it's 1-866-725-5467. You can email us at buckmastershow.com with your questions. And the Buckmaster Show Facebook, join up. We're hoping to hit 1,000 friends by Labor Day. We just went over the 900 mark yesterday, so very encouraging. If you have a guest you'd like us to interview on the program, I'd love to hear from you as well. Now, on to Pima Community College. We're going to spend the first half hour of the program talking about these proposed admission changes. Pima Community College has not required incoming students to have a high school diploma or a GED. That could change under a plan proposed by Dr. Roy Flores, the chancellor at Pima Community College, one of the largest community colleges in the United States. Dr. Flores is joined today by Scott Stewart. Scott is one of the five members of the Pima Community College Governing Board, joining me in studio on the Buckmaster Show. Scott and Dr. Flores, thanks for being with us.
Good to see you, Bill.
Thank you.
Good to see both of you. And this is a hot topic, Dr. Flores, in the community right now. This changing the open admissions policy, which has pretty much been in place since the founding of the college.
Well, we'd like to look at it a slightly different way. We're expanding opportunities. We're not saying that we're going to turn students away. We're simply saying that we have a problem that's been intractable for the last 40 years. And we're going to try a different approach to see if we can solve the problem. And briefly, here's the problem. 80% of the students who come to us require remediation, and most of them do quite well once they take our courses and then move on to the regular college curriculum.
And when you say remediation, that is?
That is, they need developmental work in either math or writing or reading.
To bring them up to speed.
Precisely. Some need refresher in whatever it might be, factoring quadratic equations. Others might need a little help in formulating paragraph sentences and so on. But we do have, since we have no threshold at all, there are some students who are coming to us at grade level 3 and grade level 4 and grade level 5 and 6.
Elementary school level?
Precisely. And our faculty have tried in many different ways. We've just not been successful in moving them to the point where they can take a college course and much less graduate. Only 5% of these students who are testing below grade level 7 actually take a college course and pass it successfully. And only 3.8% ever graduate. Now, what we're trying to do is to look at the college as a whole. We're very successful in the non-credit setting. We have the CTD program, which has hundreds of students that learn basic skills and get jobs. We also have adult basic education, which gets them to the point of getting a GED and hence prepared for college. And when the GED students test, they do actually better than the average high school graduate. So what we're trying to do is to look at ways of helping these students in a different setting. And the college setting is costing them money. It's obviously costing the college money. So we think that a different approach would be helpful.
Scott Stewart, let's bring you in. Some of your thoughts on these changes.
Well, I thought we needed to do something like this for quite a while. The idea that students can come to us not knowing what a noun or a verb is, unable to form a sentence, and that somehow they're going to succeed in the college setting is pretty unrealistic.
Scott, I had assumed, and I think I'm not alone, also Dr. Flores on this, that to get into Pima Community College, you needed a high school diploma or the equivalent of a GED. I mean,
I assumed that. There are a number of community colleges, I believe the majority, that do require a high school diploma or a GED. And I'm not saying that we should have necessarily a requirement to have a high school diploma or a GED. I think the real requirement should be how you do on a placement exam or an assessment test. And if you, what our data shows that if you test at the seventh grade level, you know, this is for college, if you test at the seventh grade level, we have a way in the college credit scenario to bridge you to college and get you there and be successful. What we're finding, and maybe even sixth grade, but we're finding that below sixth grade, you know, only one in 20 get to the point where they can succeed in another college level class. Of those that do, a significant fraction of them do go on further. But, you know, a 95% failure rate is just completely unacceptable. So we have to do something different. And it's a question of what to do different. And I think the idea of taking a look at using adult ed more and literacy partners more to get people to the point where they can read. Our English people tell us, our writing and reading faculty tell us that if you can write a paragraph, we can get you to the point where you can write an essay and a term paper. But if you can't diagram a sentence, you know, if you don't know what part of the sentence the noun and the verb are, you're going to have a tough time. So those people need to, you know, we need to have a different approach for those folks.
Dr. Flores is with us. He's the chancellor of Pima Community College, and you're just hearing from Scott Stewart, one of the five members of the Pima Community College Governing Board. There has been some controversy, Dr. Flores. There was a letter to the editor from a former campus president today in the Star, and then I think it's about four dozen former faculty, administrators, and board members at Pima are not happy about these changes. But you anticipated there would be controversy.
Well, I'm not sure I anticipated controversy. I know that that folks hold different views, but I've heard no evidence to the contrary, and no one's disputing the facts as laid out by Mr. Stewart. So it's a question more of an emotional change and the perception that we're closing doors, and we're not doing that. We're looking at different opportunities and expanding pathways.
There will be pathways for these people,
yeah, precisely.
And I believe it's what percent of these people that come without a GED or a or a high school diploma?
About 10%.
So there will be pathways for this group of people.
Right. Now let's break this down a little bit. Most people with a high school diploma do quite well. They're not testing at seventh grade and below. The people that do not have a high school diploma or a GED, some of them are testing quite well. We have 70-some thousand students. We're only looking at the maximum of 2,300 that would require some other kind of approach. The other point I'd like to make to underscore the points that Scott was making, is that a GED is valuable. If nothing else, if folks get a GED and do not graduate from Pima or any other college for whatever reason, their lives are going to be, on the average, better They're going to earn more money over a lifetime than if they're a high school dropout and that's all they have going for them. So we want to encourage people to get a GED, to get a high school education. We want them to stay in school. If you look at what some of the community-based organizations are doing, the Literacy Coalition, LULAC with its emphasis in stay in school, all these folks want to emphasize the importance of a high school diploma. So we want to underscore that. But again, the fundamental issue here, while that's very, very important and a good societal goal, the fundamental issue here is how do we help people who are really at the very low end?
We're going to take a break here. Coming up on 12:15 on the Buckmaster Show, we're going to hear from some of the fine sponsors who support this show. Please, I urge you, support these people. They believe in what we do here. I want to also tell you our phone number, 790-2040, 790-2040. Dr. Flores is with us, and one of the five members, Scott Stewart of the Pima Community College Governing Board. Perhaps you would like to weigh in on this change in the open admissions policy. We'd love to hear from you on our topic today. Let's take a break. We'll be back.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with 30 projects underway, including River Road to Ruthroth along La Cholla and the Star Pass Mission Road intersection. Please use caution in the area and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has also implemented transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com. The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at ArizonaInn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
It's 12:20 on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040, 790-2040. If you have a question about this change, proposed change in the open door admissions policy at Pima Community College, Scott Stewart is with us, one of the five members of the Pima College Governing Board, and Dr. Roy Flores, the Chancellor of Pima Community College. Scott Stewart, let's begin with you. What about a housewife? She wasn't able to get a GED or a high school diploma and now finds herself, the kids are grown up and needs to go back to school, would like to go to Pima. Would she be shut out under these changes?
No, but there are some claims out there that she would be shut out. What she would do is she would come to us, we would run her through our assessment tests, and depending on where she placed, we would put her in one of our DevEd classes, either the ones that are suitable for people who have a sixth or seventh grade education in the credit setting, depending on where we draw that line, or we'd refer her to Pima College Adult Education, or if worse, one of our literacy partners, and we're still developing those partnerships. The big deal about being a community college is making sure that you can serve, you know, that example of the population, the person who is motivated to get their life together even though they've gotten behind over the years, and make sure that they have a pathway to get into the credit setting of the college and reach whatever educational goals that they have. The idea, however, that the vast majority of the students coming to us who are so severely underprepared are that person, I think, is wrong. The vast majority of students who come to us who are that severely underprepared are really just not that motivated and aren't committed to doing well, in my opinion.
Dr. Flores, the economics of this situation, what does this mean? Is it a cost? I assume there'd be some cost savings to PCC.
Yeah, there would be, but I think the more important thing is that we're going to be saving costs over time. You know, we spend $22 million on remediation, and we will continue to spend a huge chunk of money on remediation in the future. But I'm hopeful that over time, as we improve our education system, not just at Pima, but K-12 and elsewhere, working closely with the community, that we have fewer and fewer people coming to us, high school graduates, coming to us that need that kind of remediation. It makes an enormous difference. And if someone needs one class of remediation that's significantly different than needing three classes in math and two classes in reading and two classes in writing, that's very costly. So this is the kind of change we hope to effect.
Are you hoping, I'm sure you are, to keep this as a lesson in civil discourse, something that certainly the community should weigh in on?
Well, I think this is a passionate issue, as it should be. But it's an important issue, and it's something that we should be respectful of in listening to other people, listening with an open mind. I certainly am pledged to do that. I think I can speak for our board. All of us are eager to hear ideas and to discuss them. And perhaps we can serve as one of many fine examples for our students, that this is the way you look at a difficult issue. You discuss it over time, take big chunks of it, make sure you're you're listening and make sure that you're getting your points across.
790-2040, 790-2040, if you'd like to weigh in on the Pima Community College proposed changes in admission, we'd love to hear from you now. Scott Stewart, what happens now? The board, you and your other board members, the other four members in the board, what will you be looking at? What's the timetable?
Oh, I'd say that the board is generally supportive of an approach like this. I think most board members are still a little concerned about how firm the pathways to Pima partnerships will be and whether they'll be ready in time for our proposed fall 2012 or summer 2012 rollout of this. But we're going to have a formal vote in September. In my view, we're taking a slow approach to this so that we can make sure that those partnerships can be set up well and that we know how we're going to be able to serve those students and how many of them we're going to serve. There's a significant number of severely underprepared students. We may not be able to help them all. We may have to do some selection criterion on them as well. We'll see how that goes.
Dr. Flores, it really raises a couple of questions. You were saying that sometimes the people, actually the GED students, sometimes perform better than those that have a high school diploma. That raises some questions, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think it raises questions about K-12 as much as it raises questions about the education process, because if you're prepared for a GED and you've gone through that and you're studying and working with other people and tutors and so on, and then you go take our test, you're going to do well. And that's the kind of scenario we want to be able to work with the students that Scott just described, so that we engage them, we assess their needs, and work with them. But the reality is there are some individuals for whom it's going to be very difficult. If you are at third grade, it's going to be unlikely that we're going to move you that quickly. I think you're going to need some other kinds of experiences. The other thing is, sadly, there are some individuals who use colleges, not just Pima Community Colleges, but colleges around the nation, just to get the financial aid. And that's not an uncommon phenomenon. I'm not saying the majority of them are, but there are some that just show up, enroll at the college and get the financial aid, and that's about all they're interested in.
And you were mentioning this would bring Pima Community College in line with what other community colleges in Arizona and around the United States are doing as far as admissions?
Around the nation, it's common for community colleges to require a GED or high school diploma, and there are others that will say, if you don't have a high school diploma or a GED, if you can show evidence, or the equivalent, if you can show evidence that you're ready for college, you're welcome to come in. And I don't know that we'll go that far, quite honestly, because our threshold is not going to be college ready. I mean, I can tell you that right off the bat. We're looking at arm wrestling over 6th or 7th grade at the moment.
How does the budget situation look for the college right now?
allow me to address that. Even in good economic times, the state legislature has never been particularly friendly. I've been on the board since 99, and in all that time, only one year did I see the amount of money we got one year exceed the amount of money that we got the year before. And back then it was around $1,200 per full-time equivalent student we had. Now we're down to around $300. I fully expect it to go down even further, but that's okay. Every time they've cut our funding, they've also increased the constraints. So that's not entirely true, but there's usually more constraints coming down the road. And
could you foresee a day, Dr. Flores, where there will be no state funding for the community college?
Well, I think Scott's on a roll. Let's let him continue.
Yeah. Do you see that?
Well, back then I called it the state's going out of business curve, and I don't ever see it returning back to its prior levels. The state is in a serious financial hole, and I would suggest that they would probably say that if community colleges, particularly the urban ones, can survive without any state support, survival should be the should be the guideline, not necessarily is it the best thing to do.
Where we are as far as the future goes is we're going to depend mostly on local taxes and tuition.
Thank you so much, Dr. Flores and Scott Stewart, talking about the changes in the open admission policy. Those are proposed changes. Folks, if you have questions about it, there will be some public forums before, and there's already been one. There'll be another one or two coming up before the board votes. Let's take a break right here. We'll be back on the Buckmaster Show.
SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The White House reports little progress from private meetings President Obama had yesterday with Republican House leaders and separately with Democratic congressional leaders. A huge section of the country, from Kansas to Massachusetts, is under an excessive heat warning issued by government forecasters. Officials at California's Yosemite National Park say they have no plans to add new warning signs to the area where several young people were swept over a 317-foot waterfall earlier this week. Looks like the pro football labor dispute may be nearing an end. The owner of the Indianapolis Colts says he expects NFL team owners to vote today on a tentative deal. On Wall Street, the Dow is up about 171 points. The NASDAQ trading 24 points higher. More details at srnnews.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit Service. With 30 projects under construction, including Tankerville Road and the Catalina Highway to Houghton and the bus pullout at Ina and Oracle, please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Biro Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Biro Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Biro Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at viroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tankerville, at the southwest corner of Tankerville and Savino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tankerville, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tankerville and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's 12:34 on the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our simulcast partners in Globe and Douglas. 790-2040, 790-2040 is the Buckmaster Show hotline. And joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line, Mike Fader. Mr. Fader is the Tucson Padres general manager. Mike, how are you today?
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Very good. You were rained out yesterday, but you've got actually two games, I guess, then tonight?
Correct. You know, well, officially, we played one inning. We have the bases loaded with one out, and then the rains came last night. The first game's going to be nine innings. That starts at 5:30. The second game will start after that. Obviously, we don't know the time, and that will be a seven-inning game. And there's a lot of questions because it's also Thirsty Thursday, which is a really popular promotion. So what we're doing for the people who do like dollar beers or soft drinks, the beer will start at 5:30. At game time, it'll go all the way till 9.
So happy hour begins early at the ballpark tonight.
I guess so.
Hey, Mike, tell us about this special evening that is planned tonight, some of the proceeds going to a family that's really had some terrible struggles here lately.
Well, Crystal Kasnoff reached out to us 2-3 weeks ago and heard the story about a young family that they lost a 5-year-old child to leukemia. The bills were enormous. The father is a U.S. Customs agent, and it just, you know, he ran out of vacation time, had to take personal time, and they buried their child in June. The bills for the funeral, for their mortgage, for the medical bills, all of those have just really just been enormous. And so they came to us and said, is there anything we could do? So we said, hey, we'll do a 50-50 raffle. You know, to try and raise some money there. We'll also give a dollar of every ticket sold tonight to the family and do whatever else we could do to help. For that reason, this is a very giving community, as I think we all know. We're just asking people, just if for no other reason, come out there. We'll also take donations at the ballpark and do whatever we can just to help the people out. I mean, it's nice when you have the opportunity to run a baseball team that you really can do some things that impact the community. And we've done that with the community food bank 2 nights ago, and we've helped a lot of youth organizations that have advanced the state tournament that just couldn't afford to go. And I think that's the most important thing. If we achieve anything in the time we're here, it's going to be that we've really given back to the community and we've been a real partner to people in need.
Mike Fader is with us, the Tucson Padres general manager, and of course the news came out of Escondido, California, which is the greater San Diego area, that officials there recently said that it looks like the chances of bringing minor league baseball to that community, and i.e. the Padres, look pretty slim right now. Is that what you're hearing?
That's exactly what I'm hearing. If you take the clock back a year, the Portland club was for sale, and a group made up of San Diego Padres investors proceeded to buy the club, and with the intention that they were going to move it to Escondido. Escondido, like you said, is about 45 minutes outside in the North County area of San Diego. Well, as things went along over the last year, the state of California, Governor Jerry Brown, just decided, you know what, you know, we've given all these cities redevelopment funds for redevelopment agencies, and if they've not used them, the state of California needs the money, and we're taking it back. That virtually was wrapped up probably in the last 2 weeks, and Escondido was told, if you want to continue and keep this money, you're going to have to come up with $9 million additional. I don't know how to term it. Well, there was obviously no money committed to that, and Jeff Morad, who was the chairman of the North County Baseball LLC, just said, you know, hey, this is something we really can't do. So what came out next was, if we can keep it, we meaning them, the Padres, if we can keep it in the North County area, we'll continue to move forward. If we can't, then we're going to have to consider an ownership change and sell the club. Well, what does that mean to Tucson? I'm sure that would probably be your next question.
It is my next question. Now that it looks like it is financially impossible, and those are the words of the city manager in Escondido, Clay Phillips, he says, it's off the board. Escondido is out. So what happens to Tucson?
Well, for sure we know that we're set for another year, 2012, that nothing changes on that. To me, what it means is, regardless of who owns the team, they're not going to be able to come up with a baseball scenario quick enough, and then I think that even gives us an extra year for to 2013. And then if you know, we probably aren't totally pleased with where we are right now, but with the understanding we had 4 months to put this together. So next year we're going to have a complete off season. We're going to have a lot of time. People have experienced the fun at the ballpark and all the good things that we've done. I think if we have a great year in 2012, whomever owns the club will seriously consider Tucson as a full-time option, a long-term option. We don't know that until, you know, if this were a year from now, we could better answer that. But our plan is to figure out a way of making that work, and that's what we're going to do.
Tucson certainly has to make a good impression with the Pacific Coast League when it comes to increased attendance. Tucson ranks last, I understand, in the Pacific Coast League at some 3,400 fans per home game. So, I mean, there's work to be done there.
They're without question. I mean, that number has to – I mean, we're not going to be a top two or three team in the league. I mean, Round Rock, which is the Austin, Texas area, averages more than every crowd we've had this year but one, and that was our 4th of July and when we had 10,600 people. They average over 8,500 people a game. You know, there's a lot of big ones, Sacramento and a few of the teams like that. So, but if we can get to the four to five thousand people average range, I think we're respectable, and I think that it kind of puts us back in the pictures for future baseball. If we stay at the numbers we are, 3,500, well, the next year will most likely be our last year.
The Padres have played this season and are playing it at Keno. Before the season, your group looked at High Corbett Field as a site. The team was unable to play there because the Tucson Toros had a lease, but now the Toros, I guess, have played their last game at High Corbett. How does High Corbett fit in the mix?
I think we still have to consider it. Obviously, at one point, it was something that made sense to us. So we're going to consider all of our options. But we have to, you know, we're not disappointed with Keno Stadium. But it somehow, at times, it feels like the community would rather have us at High Corbett. Now, let me tell you, High Corbett is not as good of a facility as Keno Stadium, but if it gets us to the point that it helps draw more people, that's why we have to look at it very seriously.
It is expensive, isn't it? There are things like the costs of the. I understand you had to install or are going to install a new infield this month.
We did, and it's right now. I'll tell you that it's it is the equivalent of most major league stadiums right now, as far as the grass and the dirt surface of the infield. I mean, it's fantastic. And the San Diego Padres head groundskeeper came in and supervised the whole job. He got us a lot of discounts because of the Major League Baseball people. And it's really pleased. Now, I won't tell you that came without a price tag. You know, it's probably going to be between $10,000 and $15,000. And that's the responsibility of the Tucson Padres. I mean, we've asked the Pima County for help. They said they would consider it. You know, and then a few other things. You know, the Padres, you know, used some of their staff to help the installation. But we made a commitment to the San Diego Padres that our field would be kept at a professional baseball standard. And, you know, the field, after 12 years of some wear and tear and some bad Bermuda, which not only has plagued us this year, but has also plagued numerous golf courses. I've heard that Randolph Golf Course is closed until September 1st. I heard the Tucson Country Club has had major problems. Well, we've got the same. I mean, our climate isn't always conducive to growing grass when you go 84 straight days without any rain.
Okay.
But now the field is in tremendous shape, and it's all new. So the root system, let's say, is much better than it's ever been, and that gives us a great plus.
Okay, Mike Fader, we're going to wrap it up. The homestand, give us a final word on that.
Tonight's the last day of this homestand. Then we go to Las Vegas for 4 days, come home next Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're home for 4 days then. So it's kind of back and forth. We invite people to go to TucsonPadres.com, and all the information is always posted. And it's something that that we want the people, and we want to invite the people to come out and participate. And like you asked earlier, that's how this is going to work, and we have confidence Tucson community support it.
And if the team starts winning a little more, that will probably help attendance as well, right?
You know what's funny, Bill? I don't necessarily agree with that.
Okay.
Because our biggest crowd is because of the 4th of July. Our next biggest crowd is because of the San Diego Chicken. Other crowds are because of Dollar Beer Night. People don't necessarily, on the minor league level, they're not concerned about wins or loss. Would they like to win more than they would lose? Of course.
They just want a good time.
But you'll never hear it come from my mouth that the reason we're not doing well is because of attendance or because of the record of the team, because it's not true.
Very good point. Mike Fader, have a great afternoon. Good luck. Thanks.
You too. Thank you for the opportunity to explain everything.
All right. 12:46 on the Buckmaster Show. What in the world was it like living in Tucson during the monsoon before air conditioning? Oh, boy, that is a grim thought, but we're going to explore that with our historian contributor to the Buckmaster Show, Ken Scoville, right after this.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge!
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pet orthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and Fifth Street. Your feet will thank you every day.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining.
Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
It's 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. August is Tucson's birthday celebration month as the city marks its founding on August 20th, 1776. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show, contributor on history, Ken Scoville, who is a native Arizonan. He has written extensively about Tucson's history. He's been a teacher in Tucson for many years. Ken, good to see you.
Good afternoon, Bill.
You know, I don't have to wait, or none of us have to wait, till the end of August for the birthday celebration. I'm surprised. There's so many events coming up, really, starting August 1st.
That's right. And I think what's really exciting about the birthday month, that there's something going on every day, and it's for every different interest, all the way from our more traditional flag raising that we do on August 20th of all the different countries and parts of Tucson have been, but also one of my favorites is watching the bats fly from underneath the Campbell Avenue Bridge at the Rialto. It's great to go over to get something to eat and then watch the bats fly.
And all that kicks off a happy birthday kind of month walk up a mountain that will be starting on August the 1st. And everybody can come out and celebrate that. I think that starts real early at 6 a.m. But there's a whole list of the birthday events at tucsonsbirthday.org. And, Ken, we will have you back before August 20th. That will be our topic in August, the birthday celebration.
That'd be great.
I want to talk a little bit about Tucson and the monsoon. My goodness. Can you imagine how hot and muggy it must have been before air conditioning here?
The reality for everybody, up even past into the 19-teens, would be sleeping outside. So you can imagine, and during June, and as much as we look forward to the monsoons, just imagine when you slept outside. You really look forward. It was the event for the summer.
You know, do we have any kind of monsoon watchers or weather watchers? Are there some historical accounts of what the monsoon might have been like the summer thunderstorm season, say, in the late 1800s here in the Old Pueblo?
Well, I think you realize that we had sort of weather watchers all different times because our weather stations were sort of a little bit unorganized. Going back to 1868, 69, they were sort of at one time based downtown at Camp Lowell, which is where the Armory Park neighborhood is today, and they would change different locations. And by 1890, we actually had the U.S. Weather Service, and we got our first formal weather station at the U of A in 1891.
But something big happened. You know, we think we got an inch or two of rain, and that is indeed a huge storm for Tucson in the summer. But what happened on July 11th, 1878? That might have been one of the early storms of that summer.
Right. And the thing is, and again, record-keeping, but they did actually have instruments during this time. So the record for all-time rain in the summer from one storm is 5.1 inches. It took 70 minutes, and this was on July 11th, like we said, 1878.
In a little over an hour?
Yes.
Over 5 inches of rain?
Downtown Tucson, you're realizing small town Tucson, maybe 2,000 inhabitants, homes were washed away, the mud roofs were collapsing, and downtown was a lake.
And in contrast, Ken Scoville, when you think about we made national news here for several days in Tucson, really one of the biggest rain events that we've ever had here, certainly in the 20th century, was October 1st, 1983. And folks may remember that if they were around, all the homes that washed away. That was just under 3 inches from that storm. So this was a huge event.
This was an unbelievable event.
Yeah, and it's been really hot. They were keeping records in Tucson about hot temperatures in the summer, and I guess there was a real hot one that was recorded, maybe the all-time high?
Well, we actually have our all-time high record that I think all of us remember was in like 1983 or 84 when we had 117 degrees. But just another little, probably our earliest and most famous weather watcher was a Mr. E.L. Wetmore. And I'm sure people out there remember the Wetmore Ranch. But he was a voluntary weather observer from 1881 to 1911. And in 1907, he did a formal report in the newspaper of what the weather was like for the year. And on July 3rd is when he recorded at the ranch 117 degrees.
Going back to that big event, though, of the big rainstorm, there was a saloon keeper, I guess, by the name of George Hand. And he kept quite a diary of the daily life in Tucson for several years in the 1870s. And I guess he remembered that and wrote about that day, July 11th, 1878.
Sure. And I'm going to read you that that account. And another little insight of how important the weather was. George almost started every one of his notations with what the weather was like for that day. So here it is for 1878 on July 11th. It rained a little at 3 o'clock this morning. I was sleeping outside and it drove me in the house. Still cloudy, but no rain yet today. 5 p.m., cloudy and dark. Commenced raining very hard. More water fell and ran in the streets than in a number of years. Many houses were washed away and a great amount of damage was done. A telegram says Lieutenants Henley and Rucker were drowned today near Camp Bowie. And at the end, he still says, I slept well.
He slept right
through
it.
The temperature yeah. got cool enough that everybody had a good night's sleep, even though it was a tough
so
time.
He was able to finally get a little sleep. So he was quite a character, wasn't he, that George Hand?
Well, I think when you think about people's lives, realizing he was originally from New York, and then once everybody heard about the gold rush in California, he moved out. And that was the last time he would see his family members his whole lifetime. And then he sort of was a staunch unionist, and he gets involved in the Civil War, fights in the Civil War, and then finally ends up back in Tucson and opens up a saloon with another friend.
It's an interesting book, and I know it is, I think it's out of print, but you probably could obtain it on Amazon or one of the services, book services, Whiskey, Six Guns, and Red Light Ladies.
Right, and the editor of that was Neil Carmoni. Back in earlier times in Tucson, in the 1920s and 30s, they used to have a snippet every day of George Hand's diary.
We're speaking with Ken Scoville, and we're talking about what it was like here in Tucson in the before air conditioning, in the late 1800s in the Old Pueblo. We're talking about that monumental rainstorm. Let's hope we never see anything like that in the past. But we did have even some bigger storms, I guess, that have been recorded in Tucson. Or was that the biggest
one? That was the biggest one. I think one of the big questions always people ask me a lot, did they have more rain in earlier times in Tucson?
That's a good question.
And from doing some research, it looks like the research from 1867 to 1954, they divided the record into three periods. The drier era ended in 1904 with an annual average rainfall of 11.07 inches. A wet period from 1905 to 1923, we had an average rain of 12.89. This is for the year. And then another drier era in 1924 to 53. I think really interesting, the lowest annual rainfall during this entire period was 1924, when the entire year we only got 5.6 inches of rain, and that summer monsoon was an inch and a half.
Oh, boy, that was a...
That was tough.
That was not a good one. The wettest monsoon.
Wettest monsoon, 1964, which brought 13.84 inches of rain there at the time, but we had probably... of that, maybe 7 or 8 inches during the summer.
You know, if you look at the past records for weather patterns, you have to wonder, we're in a long-term drought, certainly.
Well, they would say that looking at the cycles, because I know in the 1950s, people, not too many people today remember that, we had a tough time in the 50s, 1950s.
Ken Scoville is with us. He's the historian for the Buckmaster Show. He joins us once a month. We talk about Tucson history with Ken. And looking ahead to August, you'll be doing probably some walking tours, perhaps?
Sure. As part of the birthday celebration, and if the monsoons hold well and we cool off in the evenings, I'll be doing some walking tours probably from 6 to 7:30 in the evening.
And Tucson, you know, when you talk, you have to be kind of careful when you talk about Tucson's founding, because people have really, as you know, Ken, lived at the on the banks of the Santa Cruz River a lot earlier than the 1776 founding.
Right. We've actually had a lot of founders of Tucson over the last 4,000 years, we've had lots of people found Tucson.
There's a lot of people that have called the Old Pueblo home. And again, I want to direct folks to the Happy Birthday birthday site, tucsonsbirthday.org. All sorts of activities are planned starting on August 1st. I think there's almost something every day, Ken.
I think there's something every day.
And we will be talking more about it with Ken Scoville coming up on his August visit to the Buckmaster Show. Ken, good to have you back. I know you were up in Montana. You did not get a chance to go over the Going to the Moon Road.
Going to the Sun Road. I got a part way on one side, and then I had to loop around because it was still closed because of snow and avalanche concerns in July, and then go around to the eastern side and go in. But it's just a gorgeous place.
Thanks, Ken. Have a great day.
Thank you.
The Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, Certified Public Accountants. I am Bill Buckmaster wishing you a great afternoon. Drop by and see Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 2919 East Broadway. Police Chief Villasenor, Roberto Villasenor, is our Friday Focus interview tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show at noon. Hope you'll be with us. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas and 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.